The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
There are many rules concerning how money works with you or against you. How do you know if you're playing the money game the right way? Welcome to Cultivate Your Financial Health with your host, Wayne Firebaugh. He'll teach you how the rules of money now can affect the choices, how many or how few, you'll have throughout your lifetime. Now, here is your host, Wayne Firebaugh.
I am Wayne Firebaugh, and I'm so glad you're joining me for Cultivate Your Financial Health here on the Voice America Variety Network. We try to talk all issues related to the lifelong process of growing and curating your wealth. And if you want to talk, well, I am a CPA and a certified financial planner, and I would love to talk to you. You can get me at 866-472-5788, or there's lots of other ways you can connect to me. You can get me by Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Wayne Firebaugh. Email radio at cultivateyourfinancialhealth.com, or check out my website, waynefireball.com. And if you want to talk by phone between shows, you can get me at 855-WAYNE-11. Well, 2x equals 10, right? 3x equals 9. Simple algebra to balance those equations, right? I mean, we look for balance everywhere in our lives. I mean, you've heard, I'm an accountant by training, and the books have to balance. I mean, even some 800 years ago, the seed of modern bookkeeping was sown in Florence, Italy. Fragments dated to 1211 of the account book of a Florentine banker present the earliest known evidence of the double entry system. From this time, the art of bookkeeping began to bud and continue to grow in the fertile soil of commercial practice in Italy. About 300 years later, the double entry concept came to full fruition in Venice. In 1494, an Italian monk published a book on mathematics, which included 36 chapters explaining double entry bookkeeping. In his book Summa, Luca Pacioli wrote, "We described the method employed in Venice." Pacioli made no claim to the invention of double entry system, but its inclusion in his book has resulted in his being generally recognized as the author of the first published book on double entry bookkeeping. So we want things to balance. We want our books to balance, and we have for 800 years. Philosophy suggests we also look for balance in nature. For example, in Chinese philosophy, yin and yang are concepts used to describe how apparently opposite or contrary forces are actually complementary, interconnected, and interdependent in the natural world, and how they give rise to each other as they interrelate with one another. Many tangible dualities, such as light and dark, high and low, hot and cold, fire and water, life and death, male and female, sun and moon, and so on, you get the idea, are thought of as a physical manifestation of the duality of yin and yang. Yin and yang can be thought of as complementary, rather than opposing, forces that interact to form a dynamic system. Everything has yin and yang aspects. For example, shadow cannot exist without life. In art, balance in art also often means having a symmetrical arrangement which adds a sense of calm. Asymmetrical arrangements create a sense of unease and imbalance. For a balanced arrangement, one day, with respect to art, view an online image of the Mona Lisa by Da Vinci, and notice that although her portrait is slightly off-center, there's a symmetry to her face itself and indeed to the background of the painting. You're drawn to look directly at her face. There's balance. So mathematics, business, philosophy, even art all seek balance. What about our personal financial lives? I mean, after all, this show is Cultivate Your Financial Health. So every other area of our life seeks balance. What about our personal financial lives? Absolutely. Well, as I noted last week, financial planning really seeks to balance the tension between your current financial reality and your desired financial outcome. Save too little now and you retire penniless, and nobody wants that, but at the same time, sacrifice too much now for saving and you don't enjoy life's journey. I mean, can you imagine not getting to spend time with your kids right now or with your spouse? So sacrifice too much for the saving, and you don't enjoy the journey of life that you have between now and then. That's the broad balance in financial planning. But for many of us, and for many of the people I talk to every day, there's a much more pressing area of balance, the ins and outs of their retirement plan. We spend our time thinking and worrying about the debits and credits of our own retirement cash flow. The question I hear most often, some variation, see if you've asked this question in your own mind, how much do I need? When they ask me that, I always know what they're talking about. Or sometimes they'll say it, what's a good number? Do I have enough? They're all asking the same thing. Of course, all of these people are wondering whether their retirement portfolio will be big enough to provide a sustainable. And that's a key word, sustainable. Sustainable, will it last my entire lifetime? So what they're asking is my portfolio going to be big enough, large enough? Do I have enough? If not, how much do I need to provide a sustainable income for the rest of my retirement life? So in working to answer that question in whatever form they ask it, we go back to algebra. We go back to yin and yang. We go back to art. We go back to balancing the ins and outs. Now, as a CPA, I like to think in terms of cash inflow and cash outflow. I'm a little geeky that way. What can I say? So cash inflow and cash outflow. Hence, I've shortened it to ins and outs. You know, everybody's got to be hip with lingo, right? So I suppose my CPA training and general human nature want those two things to at least balance. But if one's going to be larger, well, I want it to be my cash inflows. You know, I want to have more revenue than expense. But unfortunately, that's not the way it works for most people. Most retirees have some sort of gap between their outs and their ins, and not in a good way. Most retirees spend more than they receive in the form of income. To address what is an obvious problem, I need to see how big my gap or deficit is, because that will tell me how big my portfolio needs to be. That, in turn, will help me determine how I need to build my portfolio. That is so important. Let me say it again. To address this obvious problem, I need to see how big that gap is, how big that deficit between my cash inflows and my cash outflows. How big is that deficit? Because that's going to tell me how big my retirement portfolio needs to be. How big does my 401k need to be? How big much money do I need to have in my IRA? What's a good number to have there? So that's going to, knowing that deficit is going to tell me how big my portfolio needs to be, which, you know, then I back into that and say, well, if I need to have this big a 401k, this big of an IRA at such and such desired retirement plan, how am I going to build that? How much do I need to save? How do I need to invest? The questions follow one on the other. The only way to do that is by looking at both sides of my ins and outs equation. Let's look at the outs. Most of us have a couple types of outs. We have our recurring living expenses, you know, the things you spend for, like, your electric bill, your gas bill, gas for your car, food. Those types of things are recurring living expenses. Lots of us have some debt. Maybe you have a mortgage. Maybe you have a car payment. Maybe you have a personal loan. Maybe you have a credit card. Most of us have some debt. Some of that debt is going to be paid off before retirement, and some of it, particularly sometimes with examples of mortgages, those debts can extend on into retirement. So we have recurring living expenses, the routine expenses associated with day-to-day life. We have our debts that will be paid before retirement and debts that will continue into retirement. And the last thing we have are expenses that are either going to increase or decrease because of retirement. Let's think of some common examples of that. One of the most common is travel. That's a common additional expense people are going to incur in travel. That's an add. A reduction in expenses might be commuting. You know, thank goodness, you retire, you're not going to have to commute to work anymore. You get to wear, if you like, grungy clothes. You don't have to wear work clothes. You don't have to wear a suit and tie anymore. So common examples of the expenses that are going to increase or decrease because of retirement are things like travel and work-related expenses. Some are going to be adds, and some are going to be deducts. But regardless, figuring out what those outs are, that is the crux of your successful retirement plan. Now, I know most people want to focus on the portfolio and growing the portfolio, but without the knowledge of your estimated living expenses in retirement, how are you ever going to know whether you truly have enough? I've heard news stories say many people will need $1 million to retire. Do you have $1 million in your retirement? If not, will you be able to get $1 million before the time you want to retire? If you do have $1 million, first of all, congratulations, but even if you do have $1 million, how do you know it's enough? The news stories might be right in average, but averages are a tricky thing. Benjamin Disraeli, the former British Prime Minister, is reported to have said that there are lies, damn lies, and statistics. The average required size of a retirement portfolio certainly must fall under the category worse than a damn lie. It falls into the statistics category. Who's a statistic? How does a statistic reflect how much I will spend? It doesn't. It can't. So, we're back to the hard work of figuring out how big my portfolio needs to be, and for that, I got to first figure out my cash outs. So, again, I have my recurring living expenses, things like my gas bill, my electric bill, my gas, my food, my water bill, you know, those things that come every month or every 6 months, my car insurance, my real estate taxes, the recurring stuff. Just over and over, I'll pay it from now until the day I die, like recurring living expenses. Then I have debts I'm going to pay, carry on into retirement, and debts that hopefully will be extinguished or paid off before retirement. And finally, I have expenses that are going to increase or decrease because of retirement. Let's talk about the easy items first. Debt. Debt usually represents a constant set amount payment obligation, usually. Your mortgage, assuming you have a fixed rate mortgage, well, that's set. It's not going to go up or down for inflation, right? I mean, just because inflation goes up to 10% doesn't mean your mortgage payment is. So when you're preparing your schedule of outs, your cash outflows, you get a gimme. Do the easy one first. You get a gimme for writing your debt amounts down. Now, you might be tempted to take a little break. I mean, you wrote down your mortgage thing. You got to go to the bathroom, got to go get a cup of coffee. You might be tempted to take a break, but let's look at the next easiest item, in my humble opinion, the expenses that change associated with retirement. Not going to commute anymore? Write down its current cost. We'll get to inflation in a little bit. No work clothes? Write down your current expenditures. No eating out for work 5 days a week? You get the idea. Write down that current cash outlay. Those are all good. You're going to reduce some of your expenses, but you're probably going to gain some expenses that will offset those areas of, let's call it, found money. You're going to have some areas where you spend some extra money, too. So plan to travel. You know, that has to be one of the most common things folks tell me that they're going to do. Almost everyone says, you know, hey, when I retire, I want to travel. Well, how much do those trips cost now? See, you may say you want to travel, and I say I want to travel, but my idea of traveling may be to go take 2 months in Europe. Your idea of traveling may be to rent an RV and drive around the Grand Canyon, drive out east, drive west. You're different strokes for different folks. So you have to decide, if you were to take those trips right now, how much would they cost? How big a trip would you want to take? Okay, quick review quiz before we get to the hard stuff. One, summarize your debt payments and the estimated year they'll be paid off. If it's after retirement, after your retirement start, if you're going to pay them off before retirement starts, we don't have to worry about them. So write down your debt payments and the estimated year they'll be paid off. Two, look at the expenses you'll get rid of in retirement and the expenses you'll add. Then we're going to talk about the thing that's hard for most people. Make a list of your current living expenses. I suggest going back through your paid bills for at least 6 to 12 months so you can pick up those things like car insurance or property taxes that don't get paid every month. Now, don't forget to include estimates for things that are paid irregularly or that constitute what I call frequent emergencies. You know the things I'm talking about, like home or car repairs, clothing expenses, doctor co-payments. Those are common expenses for things that I call frequent emergencies. So don't forget to include those. And don't get discouraged if it takes you a while to get a good list. In fact, if you nail it on the first attempt, I'd be a little skeptical that you've missed something. Make your list and let it set for a day or two, and then come back with a fresh set of eyes. Don't worry. Taking 3 or 4 passes through your living expense to get it complete is perfectly normal. In fact, most people come into my office, it takes them a while to do. Okay, I have my list of living expenses. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, those won't be my living expenses in retirement. And you're right. So I need to apply inflation to these recurring living expenses as well as the next of the expenses I will be adding in retirement. When we get back from break, I'm going to tell you how to do that. As we're looking at the out for your retirement, how do you start preparing your list of out for retirement? You want to talk about it? Maybe you got a question about your outs, or if you want to jump ahead and get to your end, or you want to jump ahead and get to how big your portfolio needs to be. That's all right. You can drive the car. We'll talk about what you want to talk about. I am Wayne Farbaugh. I'm a CPA and a certified financial planner. You can get me here on the Voice of America Variety Talk Network at Cultivate Your Financial Health. My phone number is 866-472-5788. After the break.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Listen for MD Radio on the Voice America Variety Channel.
That's Muscular Development Radio.
Every Monday, your host, Sean Ray, will take you inside the world of bodybuilding and health and fitness. The show will feature Hall of Fame bodybuilders, trainers, judges, and the future champions of tomorrow. Plus, you'll be invited to participate in our call-in Ask the Pros feature. And our nutritional spotlight will feature products that can help you achieve your fitness goals. MD Radio is broadcast live Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Get the news on our shows and other happenings by following us on Twitter. Find us at VoiceAmericaTRN or Twitter.com/VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are listening to Cultivate Your Financial Health with Wayne Firebaugh. To connect with the show today, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to radio@cultivateyourfinancialhealth.com. Now, back to this week's show.
I am Wayne Firebaugh. I'm a certified public accountant and a certified financial planner. Thanks for joining me on Cultivate Your Financial Health. We're here to try to talk about the ways to grow and curate your wealth. So if you want to join the conversation, give me a call, 866-472-5788, or connect to me through Twitter, at Wayne Firebaugh is my Twitter handle. My email is radio@cultivateyourfinancialhealth.com, and my website is waynefireball.com. And I probably should spell Firebaugh. It's not a very common name in most parts of the country. Firebaugh does not have any L's in it. It's F-I-R-E-B-A-U-G-H. And you want to talk by phone between shows, we can do that too. My toll-free number is 855-WAYNE-1-1. We're talking today about balance. You know, philosophically, the Chinese say you have a balance between yin and yang. My former profession, accounting as a CPA, we have a balance between debits and credits. You know, double entry bookkeeping. Even art has a balance. Well, our financial plan has to have a balance as well. And nowhere is that more important than in retirement, which for many of us represents the culmination of our financial plan. We have to have a balance between our retirement ins, which is our cash flow in, and our retirement outs, which is our expenses that we pay. So we've been talking about the one part of that equation, the outs, and how to create your list, how to create your list of outs. And so we talked in the first segment about making a list of your routine recurring living expenses, And then making a list of debts that you're going to have, both those that go into retirement and those that will be paid before retirement. And then finally, we talked about making a list of the items, of your expense items that are going to change. Perhaps you want to travel more in retirement. Hopefully, you won't have to commute or buy clothes for work. And so you're going to have some changes in lifestyle when you retire. So now that you have a good list of your current expenses, and adjusted for the way things they might change in retirement, we have a problem. And that problem is even as good as that list is right now, you've been taking three or four passes through it, even as good as that list is right now, those will not be your living expenses in retirement. Because we need to apply inflation to the recurring living expenses as well as the new expenses you're going to pick up in retirement. We have to apply inflation because if I spend $100 on my my light bill now, I know it's not going to be $100 when I retire in 20 or 25 years. For example, 20 years, 3% inflation, every $1,000 becomes $1,806. 1,000 becomes 1,806. The same in 20 years, if we have 3% inflation, it's going to require $1,806 to buy the same amount of stuff that $1,000 will buy now. What about if we have 5% inflation in 20 years? Well, in 20 years, it's going to require $2,653 to buy what $1,000 will buy now. So inflation is a big deal. In fact, it might be your biggest single retirement cash outflow, given these kind of numbers, right? Well, you apply that inflation number to your recurring living expenses and the additional estimated expenses you plan to incur during retirement, say for things like travel. So, again, you say, well, if I were to take trips right now, the kind of trip I want to take is a $1,000 trip. And if I assume a 3% inflation in 20 years, well, I know that the $1,000 trip is going to cost me $1,806 for the same kind of caliber trip. Now, if you're not sure how to calculate inflation or what rate to use, I do a Google search for an online compound interest calculator. Those are going to be a lot easier to find than an inflation calculator, but it's the same concept. For this example, you put you do a search for a compound interest calculator. You put $1,000 in, a 3% rate of return, and that's going to come up within 20 years of $1,806. Now, I would use, when I do this, I would use at least 3%. But a higher inflation estimate is going to be even more conservative because it means I'm going to have to save more to compensate for higher levels of expense in the future. So use at least 3%, and then I put my expense total into the calculator, whatever your expense total is. Maybe yours is $4,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 a month. Put that into the calculator with at least 3%. Add the calculator results to the amount of any mortgage or other debt payments you have continuing in retirement, and voila, you have your first estimate of post-retirement cash outs. Now you can take that coffee break. Now, to be sure, there are some ways to make this more accurate, but I like it much better than just using a rule of thumb. That you've heard those rule of thumbs. Retirees need 70% or 80% or whatever of their pre-retirement income to live on. Hey, none of us are completely measurable by statistics. Okay, we've talked about the outs part of my retirement plan, but what about the ins? And more importantly, what about the gap? I know I'm going to have a gap. You know, the deficit, the red ink, the shortfall between my intake and outgo. What about that? Well, let's spend a little bit of time talking about that. So we've talked about our outs, and we talked about applying inflation. Now let's talk about the ins, or my cash inflows. This is the good stuff. When I look at my inflows, here are some things, some common inflows that I see. First, I have Social Security. Okay, I may have a pension. Perhaps I have an annuity payment. I may have some deferred compensation. You know, I work for a company where they give us deferred comp plans. I have a deferred compensation plan. Maybe I was a business owner. I owned a small business, and I've sold my small business, and so the purchaser is paying for my small business over time. I sold it on an installment basis. Perhaps I continue to get some sort of a salary continuation from my formerly small-held business. I sold it to my kids. My kids continue to pay me my $100K or $50K or whatever salary I earned every year. They continue to pay me for 10 or 15 or more years, however long I can get my kids to do it, because I will just inherit them. So you know, so maybe I have real estate rental income. I have 5 or 10 or 15 rental houses, or I own the office building that my business was in, and I continue to rent it to the purchaser. You get the idea. So Social Security, pension, annuities, deferred comp, closely held business continuation, real estate income. Now, at this point, I want to factor all those things in, but I don't want to consider portfolio income. Bear with me. We'll get to that in a minute. Now, everybody's going to have at least one of these sources, Social Security. You can quickly estimate your Social Security benefit go to the web and go SSA.gov. That stands for Social Security Administration.gov, SSA.gov. There, you'll find an online calculator. It's set up pretty easily. If you're going to get a pension, your employer or union can provide an estimate of your potential pension benefits at various retirement ages. For annuities, you can request that the insurance company provide an estimate of your payout at your current age. Now, since my current age is not quite my retirement age, that's going to be imperfect and rough, but it does give me a place to start. So I want to go get sources of what my inflows might be. And again, Social Security, go to SSA.gov. Use the online calculator. Pension, go to my employer, go to my union, ask them for estimates, and they'll give you estimates. Annuities, request it from the insurance company, and that's going to start to give me some ideas. Okay, now we get into things that are a little bit tougher to think about with respect to ends for my retirement plan. The tough thing for the sale of closely held businesses. If I'm selling the business, let's say, to my kids, well, then I can often do more creative things like salary continuation. You know, part of the deal for my kids buying my business is that they continue to pay me $50,000 a year for the next 20 years, and they continue to pay for my health insurance. Seen those type of deals for years. So that's I have that flexibility lots of times if I'm selling to my kids or my grandkids. Even so, I talk to a lot of small business owners who have greatly inflated sense of the value of their business. Think of it this way. If over the past 20 years I could have invested in an index fund that earned a compounded 13.1% investing in publicly traded small companies. So, you know, not the Apples and IBMs and ExxonMobils of the world, but the next tier down. I could have earned a compound 13.1% over the last 20 years if I'd been able to invest in the index. And I would have had liquidity, meaning that I could have sold my investment at any time. Pretty easy. I just call my broker, get online, and do it and sell it. And I would have had diversification. I was in an index fund, so that meant overly exposed to any single company. So I could have done that over the past 20 years by investing in an index. 13.1% compounded. So given that that's what I could have earned and had all those advantages, am I really going to pay you $1 million for your company that earns $100,000 a year? Don't get me wrong, $100,000 is a lot of money. But am I going to pay $1 million for it? Because that would give me a 10% return on something that's by definition more risk, less diversified, and it cannot be liquidated or converted to cash without cost or effort. I mean, if I own your company, your closely held small business with 20, 50, 200 employees, it's not like I can just call my broker and sell it and have my money within 3 days. Of course not. And so for that reason, I'm going to demand a higher rate of return. In fact, I've seen small business owners require much higher rates of return. I've seen 40%, 50%. I even had one client tell me that venture capital required a 100% required rate of return. So if you're relying on your business to provide some of those retirement ends, some of that retirement income, be realistic and do some advanced scouting to see what the market truly bears. Now that I've listed all the sources of income, I can apply inflation using the same principles I use for calculating expenses. However, before doing so, make sure that things like your pension don't already reflect anticipated future increases in your salary. I want to understand exactly what the numbers that I've gotten, what they include, and do they include inflation? All right. So now I have my two lists. I have my retirement outs that I've adjusted for inflation. I've used an online calculator, and I have a number that many times I look at and I go, oh wow. You know, that's twice what I'm spending now. just the power of inflation. Once I have, and I also have my list of retirement ins. So once I have my list of retirement ins and my list of retirement outs, well, I can compare the two. Do I have a gap? If you don't have a gap, congratulations. So as you look at your retirement, you find that, you know, hey, I'm bringing in $5,000 a month for my pension, my Social Security, and these other sources, and I'm going to spend $4,000 a month. Congratulations to you. You're one of the fortunate people. However, you are not home free. See, many of your sources of income may not increase with inflation the way your expenses do. I mentioned pensions, for example. Many, if not most, private sector pensions don't include inflation adjustments. The payments that you get from someone buying your business probably are not going to increase with inflation. So what you need to do is, if you remember that your gap is not a static gap. You need to look at it as you go throughout retirement, and consider might some of your income sources not keep pace with inflation. This is a common problem. I see lots of folks retire, you know, in their early 60s or mid 60s. They get a pension, they get Social Security. They're in good shape. They're, as we say in the South, they're in high cotton. So in the high cotton, because they didn't make this much money by the time they combined pension and Social Security. They didn't make this much money from working. And then they wake up one day in their mid 70s, their early 80s, and they go, "What in the world happened? I retired, I was in good shape, but now it seems like the cost of living has overtaken me." Well, it has, because what has happened is their sources of income, mainly their pension, didn't increase with inflation. So they started to get a gap over time. All right, so if you don't have a gap when you begin, fantastic. But don't go to sleep. This is something that you want to continue to follow and continue to monitor. What if you do have a gap, though? Well, that's where your portfolio comes into play. Historically, there was a rule of thumb, and danger with rules of thumb. As I mentioned, you know, I don't want to go too much with rules of thumb. You require 70% or 80% of your pre-retirement income. But there was a rule of thumb that was often used, and you see it often published. But the rule of thumb went like this, and it had three components to it. That one, if you were invested in a diversified stock portfolio, so you weren't over-concentrated in any single position or any single sector or any single mutual fund, but if you were invested in a diversified portfolio of stocks, and two, you didn't want your portfolio to long-term decline. You wanted to maintain your portfolio. You didn't want to spend down your portfolio. And it's not necessarily always a matter of leaving something to your kids, although many folks will say, you know, hey, I want to leave something to my kids. If you wanted to maintain your portfolio over time, didn't want it to decline long term. So first, you were invested in diversified equities. Secondly, you wanted to maintain your portfolio over time. And three, you wanted your portfolio not only not decline, you wanted it to increase so that you could periodically increase your withdrawals. Then what would happen is you could take 5% under the rule of thumb. You could take 5%. Some people even said 6%. Out of your portfolio each year. The math under this assumption worked like this. Let's say you had an 8% portfolio return. You had a 5% rate of withdrawal. That gave you a net 3% portfolio increase. You know, 8% minus the 5%, 8% return minus the 5% withdrew, 3% increase. Of course, you might, or you will, have two occasional market declines that if you stick to the 5% withdrawal rate, would cause you to occasionally reduce the dollar amount of your withdrawals. That's how it used to be done. Well, given the, shall we say, market excitement over the last decade and a half, many practitioners rejected the 5 to 6% in favor of the 4%. Now, even the 4% is causing some introspection within the financial planning community. But for purposes of our discussion today, we can still use it, 4% or even 3 to 3.5% if we want to be extra cautious, to determine a scope of magnitude. That's what we're trying to get to, a scope of magnitude for the size of your required retirement portfolio. It works like this. Take the annual gap that you calculated before when you compared your retirement ins to retirement outs. The deficit that you get when you do that, annualize it, and divide that number by the 3, the 3.5%, or the 4%. whatever you decide, to get a ballpark of your retirement portfolio. Now, this is far from giving us a definitive number, but it does start to tell us a number of things. Some of the questions I asked in the opening minutes of the show were, how much do I need? What's a good number? Do I have enough? Other questions that are going to arise are, when can I retire? How much should I save? How should I invest? I think of this as, what trade-off should I make between risk and return? These are the types of questions that, as I do this analysis, I'm going to get. The ins and outs analysis is something you absolutely must do if you're a do-it-yourself investor. You're managing your own investments. If you consult an advisor, it's still helpful to do the analysis because the advice you receive is only as good as the information you provide. Garbage in, garbage out, right? So as you're starting to look for balance in your financial life, starting to look for balance in your retirement life, think about doing an ins and outs analysis. I am Wayne Fireball, CPA and a certified financial planner. We get back from break, we're going to talk about one thing folks are doing to try to provide some certainty with respect to the ins part of their portfolio. But if you want to talk about money, maybe you want to talk about your ins, you want to talk about your outs, you want to talk about your portfolio, give me a call, 866-472-5788, after the break.
Streaming live. The leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Voice America Network proudly presents The Catherine Zox Show for women, men, children, and families. Catherine magically combines her compassion, experience, and talent to bring listeners a show that's upbeat, informative, and yes, a little sassy. Tune in every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern, to The Catherine Zox Show on the Voice America channel.
The world we live in has become a crazy place. Poverty is at an all-time high in the wealthiest nation on earth. We keep calling on government to save us with new programs. And now, we have more people using food stamps than any time in our history. This problem continues to get worse. The answer to poverty is in our homes, churches, and communities, and through our children. Get the answers from The Mickey Ellison Show, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Cultivate Your Financial Health with Wayne Fireball. To connect with the show today, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to radio@cultivateyourfinancialhealth.com. Now, back to this week's show.
I am Wayne Fireball. I'm a certified public accountant and a certified financial planner. You want to talk money? Then I would love to talk to you. You can get me at 866-472-5788, but you can also connect with me other ways, too. You can get me up by Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Wayne Fireball. My email, radio@cultivateyourfinancialhealth.com. Check out my website, waynefireball.com. Or if you want to talk between shows, you can get me on my toll-free number, 855-WAYNE-11. Well, the first two segments today, we spent some time talking about balance in retirement. You know, we like for balance in our life. You know, we have that illusion of work-life balance, family-work balance. Yin and yang are balanced. We have double-entry bookkeeping is intended to balance the books. So we spent some time talking about balance in your retirement plan. We all need, if we want to retire, we need to have a certain balance between the ins, the income we're going to have coming into it during our retirement years, and our outs, the cash expenses we're going to be spending, some paying while we're in our retirement years. Any gap that we have between the ins and the outs, well, our portfolio is going to have to fill those, and that's going to be our 401k, our IRA, or our annuities, or other investments. Well, some folks have done some additional things to start trying to provide some certainty with respect to the ins for their portfolio. In fact, response in an Allianz is an insurance company, Allianz survey were asked which they feared more, death or outliving their assets. 61% said they were more worried about running out of money. So it's probably no surprise that retirees and pre-retirees are very interested in maximizing any income streams that will last throughout their lifetimes, no matter how long they live. You know, my grandmother, who just recently passed away, was 4 weeks shy of her 97th birthday, but she was the baby. She still has a 100-year-old sister living and a 102-year-old sister living. So lots of folks are starting to have longevity, and they want to make sure they're not going to run out of their income. Articles about lifetime income consistently garner some of the highest page views on Morningstar.com. A recent article by Christine Benz, Morningstar's Director of Personal Finance and author, had a lot to say about a retirement income vehicle that's new to many people. Now, lifetime income sources like Social Security, pensions, and income guarantees provide a hedge against outliving one's assets, guaranteeing that there's at least some money coming in the door even when your portfolio starts to run low. Well, regulations recently issued by the United States Treasury Department, the department in charge of the Internal Revenue Service, well, regulations released earlier this month gave way for pre-retirees and retirees to obtain additional longevity protection by allowing them to put part of their individual retirement accounts into what are called qualified longevity annuity contracts. If you haven't heard about a qualified longevity annuity contract, or longevity annuity for short, if you haven't heard about them in the past, you likely soon will. Now, how are these different from immediate annuities? In an immediate annuity, you pay a lump sum premium, or think of a premium as sum of cash. You pay a lump sum of cash to an insurance company. The insurance company then immediately begins sending you a stream of payments. That's the annuity. Immediately sending you a stream of annuity payments that will last as long as you live. A longevity annuity, though, is a little different. See, a longevity annuity starts making payments at some later date in your life. For example, you might buy the longevity annuity when you're 65, but it might not begin making payments to you until you're age 85. So now because of that time period, that time lag, the deferred annuity will pay out is shorter than is the case with an immediate annuity. So by the longevity annuity, by being deferred, is going to pay out for a shorter period of life. And because the insurer was going to pay out for a shorter period of time, and because the insurer can earn some interest on the money you gave them up front, it's only logical that longevity annuity purchasers are going to receive a substantially larger annual payment with far less of a cash outlay. So you'll be able to pay less money to receive a larger benefit with a longevity annuity than would be the case for an immediate annuity purchaser. That's the potential advantage, but there are some technical issues and possible disadvantages. For example, if you take and put part of your IRA into one of these longevity annuities, how does it affect your required minimum distributions? If you're not familiar with required minimum distributions, your friends at the Internal Revenue Service have set up requirements where you have to start taking an increasing percentage of your money out of your retirement accounts at age 70 and a half. At age 70 and a half, it's a little less than 4%. By the time you get into your late 80s, early 90s, it's over 10%. An increasing percentage of your retirement accounts have to come out starting at age 70 and a half. Well, if I buy one of these longevity annuities and I can't access it until, you know, maybe for 20 years hence, how does it affect these IRS requirements that take money out? Well, the new Treasury Department regulations put some parameters around the use of longevity annuities within the IRAs. If you're approached about buying one or if you want to get some certainty, here's a couple things you need to remember about longevity annuities. First, the annuity payments must commence by age 85 at the latest. Now, you can start them at age 80, you can start them at age 82, but you can't start them at age 90. They have to start at age 85. Two, the premiums paid for the annuity cannot amount to more than 25% of the total balance or $125,000, whichever amount is left. So if you have a $100,000 IRA, you can put $25,000 in it. If you have $1 million IRA, well, you can put $125,000 into it. The premium is 25% of your IRA or $125,000, whichever is less. In addition, we see lots of variable annuities now where they have all kinds of fancy bells and whistles. I think we call them riders. The longevity annuity has to be fairly plain, fairly simple. inflation adjustment riders are allowed, meaning your benefit can, you can buy something that will increase your benefit with inflation. But the benefits of the payments cannot be variable or index, equity index, meaning they can't be tied to the market either directly through your picking investments, or they can't fluctuate based upon the movement of a stock market index. Now, importantly, the new regulations also clear up what have been a key impediment to putting longevity annuities in IRAs and company retirement plans. The role of these required minimum distributions has started at age 70 and a half. Under the previous rules, because the longevity annuity didn't begin paying you till much later in retirement, any money that you sunk into it could not be used to meet RMDs. Under the new regulations, the longevity annuity is deemed to satisfy those required minimum distribution requirements. Now, because retirees have much of their portfolios inside qualified plans, the new regulations effectively clear the way for longevity annuities to become much more prevalent in retirees' plans. Now, for those who are considered or who are concerned about outliving their assets because they could live a very long time, I mean, I have relatives in my family who live well into their 90s, longevity annuities can help provide peace of mind. A retired investor who owns such an annuity can plan for his portfolio of stocks, bonds, or funds to last through a certain time, say, age 85. If the individual is still living beyond that date, well, the annuity payments will possibly help supply income in addition to whatever cash flow the perhaps dwindling investment portfolio can provide. David Blanchett, head of retirement research for Morningstar, says that these longevity annuities are, quote, the most pure play of hedging longevity risk, end quote. He also says many retirees don't need a guaranteed source of income immediately. They want certainty around how long they have to plan their savings to last. That's why longevity annuities are so attractive, end quote. Well, Michael Kitsis, a partner and director of research for in Pinnacle Advisory Group, he agrees that longevity annuities beat immediate annuities when it comes to hedging against longevity risk, but notes that the best candidate for these types of products is someone who's specifically afraid of living well into his 90s and beyond, and is concerned that he's going to have enough money to fund a retirement that long. All right, those are some advantages, but everything is a trade-off. Into life, if to every life must fall a bit of rain, right? What is the trade-off with respect to the risk, return, and liquidity of these longevity annuities? Well, despite these attractions and the fact that longevity annuities are going to be more readily available, probably within an IRA coming to your neighborhood, they're not without potential drawbacks. The purchaser of an immediate annuity faces the chance that you're going to die before receiving a fair share of payments, or even recoup your initial premium payments. That's an immediate annuity. Well, likewise, if you buy a longevity annuity, you risk dying before or shortly after payments commence. And if you do, your estate or beneficiaries don't generally get a refund. I mean, if you put $100,000 in and you die before you get any of it back, or die only getting $25,000 back, your estate and your beneficiaries generally are not going to receive a refund. Now, the psychological effects of parting with a sum of money that never provides a benefit is one reason many retirees are going to avoid these. Mr. Kitsis points out that some products do offer death benefit guarantee. So you may look at this and say, you know what, if something happens to me, I do want my beneficiaries to get something back. So you can buy a rider, but if you try to guarantee both sides, you know, whether you live or whether you die, you're just going to end up with a mediocre combination guarantee that's not going to do very much to protect you if you live or if you die. Remember, everything that you look to buy, you have to balance risk, return, liquidity. If you want to try for all three, you got to pay. And paying reduces returns, so you really cannot have all three, can you? In addition, Mr. Kitsis correctly notes that given today's low interest rates, longevity annuities aren't going to offer an attractive return relative to conservative investment types. In other words, unless you live a really long time and are able to wring out a really large amount of cash from the annuity carrier, you may have been better off just avoiding them altogether and investing conservatively. Now, Mr. Blanchett of Morningstar believes that purchasers of longevity annuities are better off thinking of it as an insurance product rather than an investment product. Insurance products, look, you may lose money on the deal, but perhaps you're obtaining something that's more impossible to quantify, but perhaps to you, potentially more valuable, peace of mind. If you're going to buy a longevity annuity, you've got to think of it as a pure insurance policy and not be too focused on the rate of return. However, I'd like to get you to think about, if you have to decide what areas of your life you're willing and able to self-insure, just think about longevity. If I'm looking to begin payments for my longevity annuity in 15 to 20 years, what is the likelihood I could do better with another investment alternative? Of course, the ads say past performance is not indicative of future success, but over those time periods, how would I have historically fared in something that, yes, had some risk, but didn't have the return reducing costs, nor the restrictions on my liquidity? Well, assuming you decide to steer a portion of your portfolio into a longevity annuity, what's the right amount? Well, the right amount is probably not going to be more than 5 to 15%. But think about the timing of your start date. If your start date is a little farther away, you can probably afford to put less money into it. But what you really, I think, want to do is consider the living expenses that you're trying to think about. Go back to where we started our time today. Think about those baseline recurring living expenses. If you're going to buy a longevity annuity that you're looking to cover your expenses, well, perhaps that is where you should give it. That is where you should start. Even despite all this, according to MSN Money, even though many employers could offer these longevity annuities, not likely going to be happening in your 401k anytime soon. Well, I am Wayne Fireball. I'm a CPA and a certified financial planner. Thanks for spending part of your day with me. I hope you learned something that will help you cultivate your financial health. I really encourage you to spend some time looking at your retirement outs and your retirement ins. And you want to get in touch with me between shows? Send me an email to radio@cultivateyourfinancialhealth.com or call me, 855-WAYNE-11. Next week, hope you'll get to join me. We're going to talk about Social Security. How might taxes reduce the amount you actually get to spend? And we're also going to talk about the college financial aid system, how it really works. I'm Wayne Fireball, CPA and a certified financial planner. Thanks much. I will talk to you next week.
Now for the lawyer stuff. Information presented on Cultivate Your Financial Health is believed to be factual and up to date, but we do not guarantee its accuracy. It should not be viewed as personalized investment advice or as an offer to buy or sell any investments mentioned. All investments and strategies have the potential for profit or loss and may not be suitable for you. And as they say in the commercials, past performance does not assure future investment success. Cultivate Your Financial Health is sponsored by Wayne Fireball, Inc., a registered investment advisor with the state of Virginia. The firm only transacts business in states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration as an investment advisor is not an endorsement of the firm by securities regulators and does not mean that the advisor has attained a particular level of skill or ability. Our discussions should not be construed as legal or tax advice. Always consult an attorney or tax professional regarding your specific legal or tax situation. Whew, we're both glad that's finished. I am Wayne Fireball. If you want to contact me between shows, visit my website, waynefireball.com, or call me at 855-WAYNE-11.
Thank you again for tuning in to Cultivate Your Financial Health. Please join Wayne Fireball again next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, or catch our weekend replay every Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll talk again soon.